Come, little children, I'll take yins away.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Ah, it's me, Shishka Baby.
Shishka Baby. That, yep. That just screams a virgin that's going to light the candle, the black flame candle.
I've lit many a candle.
Lit many a black candle at night. No Sanderson sisters coming out of it.
Why?
Hey, you know, that's a crossover I'd want, you know, like Rocky versus the Sandersons.
I read it as Rambo. But...
that'd be better.
That'd be more efficient.
Rocky, he'd be like, I said all these sand traps and salt traps.
Sand traps? I meant to say. We got them now.
Yeah, so, you know, salt, sand, it's all the same. It's all edible. See, we're back.
Rambo lights that candle. He's going to light them up.
Rambo lights the candle, nothing's coming, because it's lit by a virgin. But with that being said, over there, Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, and hey, we actually did it. Here we are once again, back at it, as promised, kicking off our Halloween spooky month. So if you're new to the show here, why don't I give you a quick brief tour. What we do on this show is every week we take an episode, or every week or so we take a movie, we watch said movie, then we take to the pod to discuss said movie, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't, and then we submit that movie to the factory. And that's where we take the film we just watched and we have a little fun with it. Sometimes we imagine what it would look like if it came out today with modern actors and modern actresses playing the roles, as well as being directed by a modern director. Sometimes we take an animated film and turn it live, baby, live, and hey, sometimes we just imagine what a sequel would look like. So with that being said, let's go ahead and kick off our Halloween spooky month with something that's, I would say, if it was a drink, if this movie was a drink, it would be one part spooky, two parts cozy. Would you agree?
You know how when you make a cocktail, you put like a dash of bitters? This would be a dash of, I was going to say dash of spooky, but you know, I started
with that. You're like, it's a one shot of spooky, two shots of cozy, and a dash of spooky again.
I mean, like, I meant to say, like, maybe scary. Like, because there's some stuff when I was a kid that was like, this gives me the willies.
Yeah. And the movie we're talking about, that drink, is Hocus Pocus.
Witch's Brew.
Yeah, and this movie was, growing up, I was terrified of this movie, mostly because I was a scaredy cat kid. I still am, to this day, pretty scared of most things, but I enjoy horror much more now. But back then, I'd say, I don't know if you remember this or you can corroborate this, but I believe that witches, next to Chucky from Child's Play, witches were one of my biggest young fears.
Yeah, I think wolves, too, for some reason.
I don't know. I just remember I was so afraid of witches that I didn't like watching you play Banjo-Kazooie because I didn't like seeing Gruntilda. Mm-hmm. I know I did not like certain parts of Ocarina of Time because of the twin witches.
Yeah.
And that. And then I believe, yeah, this. I remember Hocus Pocus scared the bejesus out of me.
You think your other childhood greatest fear was Jim Carrey's The Grinch?
Hey, that's a scary shit. Now it's like one of my favorite Halloween movies. One of my favorite Christmas movies. But yeah, no, I remember this movie scaring the bejeebas out of me. Was not a fan of Hocus Pocus. And it was only, you know, as recent as like 3-4 years ago that I started being like, I want to watch Hocus Pocus, and I've watched it every year since.
Become your tradition, huh? It had been a while. Well, I watched it this year, and I did watch it last year. But prior to that, it had been a very, very, very long time. I don't even want to put a year to it, but it had been some time since I had seen it. Enough that I, like...
I thought you were about to put a year to it. I won't put a year to it, but it would have had to have been, like, 2010. Like, immediately put a year to it.
I'm on a roll.
I just thought that was you. You didn't do that. I just thought that's what you're gonna do.
It's been a while, and with the sequel finally coming out 29 years later, Hocus Pocus 2, it definitely just made me love this original movie so much more, and it makes me want to watch it, like, included in the run of yearly spooky movies that I do watch. And you know, it's funny, you're talking about your fear of witches. It reminded me, when I was young, I had a baby blanket, and I was, you know, getting a little older, and I was like fucking Lina carrying around this baby blanket, and our grandmother thought I was too old to be having a baby blanket. I was probably like five, six, I don't know. And our mother was like, well, he likes it, he's gonna keep it, like, it's not a big deal. Well, they went, our parents went away on a trip, and our grandmother was watching us, and she took that blanket and threw it away. I found that out years later. At the time, when I woke up and my blanket was gone, she told me witches came in the night and took it.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Witches were in your room, right next to you, breathing on you.
Yeah,
and you didn't know it. They could have murdered you in your sleep if you would have been. But they took your blanket, so.
No, that was good enough. Apparently, like, you know, I'm watching Hocus Pocus, and you know, being 5, 6 years old, thinking witches stole my baby blanket, like, I had to have been fucked up.
Oh yeah, but here we are.
And yeah, get to watch this lovely movie.
What's interesting about this one, because it does take place on Halloween, right? There's many a spooky movie, scary movie, horror movie that do not take place on Halloween, or even around Halloween for that matter. But you watch them because they put you in that mood, and it's the spooky season, you want to watch scary movies, right? And this movie is based right on that date, right on Halloween. It's one of the most, like, Halloween-esque feeling movies you can get in terms of getting what the holiday's about. And because of that,
maybe not what it's about, but maybe in the mood.
The feeling it's supposed to give you.
Yeah.
The candy, the imagery, the music, all that stuff. You know what I mean? Feeling that you're supposed to get from Halloween, the feeling that Halloween enacts in you. And so, watching, I find that I watch this movie early. Like, this is usually the first spooky season movie I watch, because it gets me in the right mood, the right mindset. And then I watch something that's just going to make me scared to go down the stairs for a couple days. But, yeah, this is always...
Hocus Pocus 2.
Yeah, Hocus Pocus 2. This is an early watch for me, though, usually every year. This is, like, my earliest watch, and then, like, toward the end of spooky season, I always watch, like, all 5 Scream movies. And wouldn't you know it, I'm still surprised at the end of Scream.
It was him the whole time?
I'm like, huh. Now, how did they do that? Pretty odd for a boy to be having a cell phone in the 90s.
Yeah, this is a good one to kick off the old October spooky season. This is like the kind of movie that, as you said, sets the mood right, so it is a good one to start. Like, hey, it's October 1st. I'm tired of waiting. It's time for pumpkin beers, candy corn, and for some reason, in my case, chicken wings. This is, like, every time, I think from now on, when I watch Hocus Pocus, I'm going to eat chicken wings.
This Why? Is not a chicken wings movie.
It's not, but last year, we watched Hocus Pocus, and we ordered chicken wings from this new place, and I don't know, I just had, like, a very good time. Now it's, like, a good memory, so now it's, like, a tradition. So
you're
we watched Hocus Pocus, too.
You're
chicken wings.
You're looking at Billy Butcherson's, like, zombie bones, and you're like, I want that. Give me that.
Yeah. You look like a chicken wing.
Yeah, I want them fingers.
I eat these chicken wings, and I pretend they're children.
Hey, maybe. But with that being said, this is one that it's been a popcorn movie for sure. And that's just like popcorn, sit down. I think one year we did a hot chocolate night 'cause it was cold enough. But yeah, we watched this one every year. And the reason we really dove into it this year was to get ready for Hocus Pocus 2, hence why we're doing it here. And obviously, that won't talk about Hocus Pocus 2 too much, because we want to talk about Hocus Pocus 1. So why don't we kick it off? The fact that, what always blows my mind is that this movie, like many movies from its era of like that late 80s, early 90s, found its place not in the theaters, but in home video, right? A home video, right, and syndication. That's where it, like, and we've done movies on here that were the same way, where they weren't very big in theaters, but the home movie market, the syndication market of being shown on TV. What was it? Wonderful Life, right? Wonderful Life was the same way, where it was a bomb. But then through showing it on TV through the years, it just became incredibly popular. Not saying this is anywhere near Wonderful Life, but similar in that it was a bomb in the box office, and then it became cult classic too. I think now it's just a classic.
Yeah, it is definitely a cult classic. Is it a classic? That's, well, then what justifies a classic? It's a classic, we'll say.
It's a classic. I don't think there's a, I don't think it's as niche. They wouldn't have made a sequel to it 20, 30, almost 30 years later if it wasn't a classic, right, now. And it says right on Disney Plus, it says sequel to the classic Halloween movie. It says classic.
That's classic. Hey. to correct you, I think we can look back retrospectively, but It's a Wonderful Life, I do not think it was a bomb. I think it was not considered a Christmas movie at the time, and through syndication, showing it every year around Christmas, it just naturally became a Christmas movie. But there's only like one scene near the very end that takes place during Christmas. We're talking Halloween spookies, though.
Hey, It's a Wonderful Life was made in 1946. It was such a flop that it ended up closing down the studio and more or less ended Frank Capra's directing career, according to DigitalSpy.com.
There you have it, folks. You heard it on the Brothers Movie Factory through DigitalSpy.com.
Yeah, there it is. It sucks. Wonderful Life's a terrible movie. Don't watch it. You hear me? Oh, it was a terrible movie. It was meant to be a Halloween movie.
There's the Sanderson sisters. Yeah, you got Winifred. You got Sarah, you got Mary, and you got Jimmy.
Yeah. When they're talking to that guy who's like, the Sanderson sisters, hey! That's actually their masters, Jimmy. He's sitting there like, oh, yeah. You need to go out there and eat some children. And when you grab the children, you tell them, they're going to die. I can't go up on any brooms, though. Get that vertigo. But I mean, all in all, it, through the years, like I always thought this movie was a big thing growing up. Like I thought it was like this, it was, because, you know, growing up the way we did and the way most people did in like the 90s, most kids did anyways, there was obviously no streaming services, and VHSs were pretty big, and then we witnessed DVD and Blu-ray and streaming and all that stuff as we got older, but most grew up the same way we did, whereas you watched what was on TV, and during this time of the year, if you turned on Disney Channel, Hocus Pocus was on. Hocus Pocus, Halloween Town, there's a reason those movies are still showing today. And many other, you know, Halloween things that are around from our day and age is because they were so popular. I think the nostalgia train, whereas like nowadays they post things, you know, different things. They might not click as much with modern youths because they have more of a choice, whereas we didn't have a choice. We just watched it and watched it and watched it, and then, you know, because it was what was on. And I think that helps in why it's had this longevity, and it's a lot of like, hey, like, I know I'm going to show my daughter it when she gets older. I'm going to definitely show her Hocus Pocus because I'm like, this is a great movie, and I know it's a great movie, and so it's like, things like that. But
yeah, and you know, it's things like that that have made this movie live on so long is when it came out, it flopped at the box office, but at home, people loved it. Because it is a quality movie, and it's become a generational thing. So like kids who grew up watching it. Like, parents showed their kids, because obviously they took them to the theater, they rented it, they put it on TV for them, what have you. Now those kids who grew up with Hocus Pocus are now showing their kids. And through that, the sequel came out, Hocus Pocus 2, just came out in 2022, and it is, over the weekend, just dubbed the most watched opening for a Disney Plus original film.
Doesn't surprise me.
And there's, you know, if you look at the list of, like, some of the names that debuted on Disney Plus, it's pretty impressive. Like Soul, Turning Red, Luca, Chippendale.
There's three Pixar movies that it beat out. And they usually win, you know, Best Animated Feature.
Black Widow.
Yeah.
You know, Marvel film. Hocus Pocus 2. It's the most watched. So it's become a thing that, you know, you now it's your turn. You get to pass it on.
Yeah. And, I mean, this movie just does a good job in setting up his characters, making you care about your character, care about the characters that are in it. What's interesting that I find is, like, you know me, I don't like many a child actor, usually like teenage actors, child actors. I'm like, these kids are just annoying. But this movie, I think that the three main characters, Max, Alice, and Danny, I think they're all very enjoyable characters. And none of them really ever have moments of, like, these people are unbearable. They're all pretty enjoyable characters.
Don't forget about Thackeray Binks.
Oh, he's 300 years old, or whatever it is.
Do you watch this movie and look at these main characters, and now you think Persona 5?
Why? Because of Morgana?
Yeah.
Because of the cat? Hey, Thackeray's all black. Morgana's got some white in there. Morgana has some white. And Morgana, besides, Morgana's not a cat. You doubt. You really think I'm that stupid.
Trollop.
I mean, all the characters are really good. And I guess let's break it down, get into what are the most important characters of this movie, the Sanderson sisters. And really start with their introduction. Why don't you go ahead and break that down, just in terms of, like, how perfect their setup is, who they are, their dynamic together, etc.
Yeah, I mean, right away you get introduced to them. Well, I guess I should start before with that little dash of creepy. Movie opens, we're back in time, back in the late 1600s and Salem witch trials.
When that anyone has is just their name.
Exactly. And you hear that song, "Come little children, I'll take yins away." And what always creeped me out is when they see the little sister, Emily, like running through the field with Sarah the witch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, ugh. It's just kind of, the visual just gives me the willies.
That's creepy. Even the first shot you really see of, like, the silhouette flying over the water.
Mm-hmm.
Or even when she lands outside the window.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were going to say.
It's creepy. That's creepy, too. It's all creepy. It's all edible. It's all very creepy. And then you see Sarah Jessica Parker, and you're like, you're not creepy.
Very beginning, sure. But what I do like about this setup, yes, they're intimidating, but as soon as we see Bette Midler as Winifred opening that window, that rear window, and... what did she say? What did she say? Like,
another glorious morning. Makes me sick.
So you get the humor right there. And then the other two sisters, Mary and Sarah, played by Kathy Najimy and Sarah Jessica Parker, their interactions with each other. The whole dynamic is very Three Stooges, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
Very, very Larry, Curly, and Moe. Which I really like. The slapstick stuff throughout. And even kind of like the status of each of them, very Three Stooges, and it's just a really well done homage, but also really unique in this situation. And these three, those actresses and their chemistry, it's the highlight of the movie. That's obviously, it's their dynamic and their delivery, or their portrayal rather, of these characters that makes this movie such a classic, to the point, like, fast forward 29 years later, the sequel, it carries on. It's like these three ladies didn't miss a step, and the characters, it's almost like time hadn't passed, and they're just as great now as they were then. Yeah. So it makes them timeless.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you get that introduction to them, and you do see all the goofiness to them. You see, I just blanked on the other names. Not Sarah, the other one, Mary.
Mary.
You see Mary's, like, dog-like tendencies, where she's, like, sniffing and snarling and whatnot early on.
Kathy Najimy said her inspiration to do that was she was like a dog on the prowl, hunting her prey. That's how she
it comes across. Sarah's kind of boy love nature. I mean, as soon as they see Thackeray for the first time, she's like, "It's a boy." She gets so excited and everything, and she's kind of airheaded, and you see that very early on as well. Even when the people of Salem come forth and they're trying to, like, you know, knocking on their door and everything like that, and they're like, pretend like we're not here, and they're like, we're devouring the souls of children. And then they, like, pull her back away. Like, stuff like that is really good. You see that she has the airheaded nature. And then, Bette Midler is just fantastic as Winifred. You do get just a perfect setup of their characters right away. They're evil airheads, almost. Like, they even Winifred, who's, like, this powerful witch and evil right down to the core, or rotten to the core, still is, like, silly and very easily tricked, which makes them kind of endearing, where they're, like, not over-the-top evil. They're evil, but they're also not over-the-top evil. And we do get that throughout. That makes them incredibly endearing characters, and that you can almost root for them.
We do see in this opening scene we're talking about that they do suck the soul out of a little girl.
Yeah, they kill a girl. They kill a girl and turn a boy into a cat so that he can never be loved again. And they curse him to live out the rest of his life that way.
Damn it, they're endearing, and you're rooting for them by the end.
Yeah, we also watch them get hanged. Like, it's a pretty dark movie right away. You can see why it'd be creepy. And then fast forward to modern day Salem, or 90s Salem, which looks cozy.
It does look cozy.
You're introduced to old Hollywood, Max Dennison, and he's smooth. He's real smooth right away, his number over to criminal. Allison. And then
fun movie factoid. Allison
really gave Vanessa Shaw his number there.
Nah, he gives her a number, and it's real smooth move. I'm like, this guy's gonna get laid tonight. And then happy. Shut up, Happy. The next scene, she gives him a piece of paper, and he's like, I got her number now. And you look, and it's the piece of paper he gave her. It's his name and phone number. But if you look closely, the numbers are different.
Really?
It's like a film mistake. Did,
she, oh, it's a mistake. I was going to say, so she did do it. She just tricked them.
No. I think it's a film mistake.
Lies.
Check it back.
Okay. And
Max is a smooth criminal.
And what's interesting about that is you do see with Max, what's cool about that is right off the bat, you see that he's kind of this fish out of water, where everyone likes Halloween there, everyone is enjoying this and everything, and he doesn't know anyone there. And that's like his first moment hit between him and Allison's character, his first moment of like fitting in or finding someone that like he might actually like there. But you could honestly see him as cocky and arrogant right off the bat, right? Like pretty early on, like he just walks up and gives this girl his number. He, basically tells them that all this Halloween stuff is a bunch of hocus pocus and stupid. But then shortly after that he gets bullied. And so, you know, you could see that he isn't all this cool, calm and collected and above everyone else. He's like, just a kid that's, you know, trying to fit in, trying to find his place in this new town. And from that, you're then introduced to him and his sister, Danny, who you even said, you were saying it yesterday when we were talking about it, how the relationship that's built up in just a short couple of scenes between Danny and Max is really well done compared to many modern day movies, even in terms of how they establish relationships between siblings or just characters that are meant to be close.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a simple formula. You got fish out of water. California kid comes to rural nowhere in Salem, Massachusetts, you know, that old chestnut.
Yeah.
You got the fish out of water story, you know, like, he's a rebellious teenager. I hate it here. Why'd you make me move here? I hate everything. Got the younger sister, the sweet younger sister, and they used to have like a little history. They say in their dialogue, we used to always go trick-or-treating. He doesn't want to anymore. He thinks he's almost like too cool for it, too old for it. But he's trying to find his place, damn it. And it's very sweet, very simple, and it actually kind of happens relatively quickly, but he comes back down, he goes out trick-or-treating with his sister, and they have a good time. They have a moment, you know, getting some candy, laying out, and seeing that the big house, where I bet they give out full-size candy bars. And they just sneak right in this house.
I've considered giving out full-size candy bars at our house, and then I see the price, and I'm like, no. Like, these kids will have Ritz crackers and be happy.
Could be worse. Last year we bought like one of those, like, buy the bucket of candy. So it was like it was probably like $30 worth of candy, and we didn't have anyone come.
That still blows my mind.
We had two people come.
Yeah, because to peek behind the curtain, Gus over there lives in like a neighborhood. I do not. And I had so many fucking trick-or-treaters. And
my theory is the house probably has a bit of a stigma. There might have been, because it was an old man who lived there before we did, so the young kids are probably like, we're not going to that house. Because these kids were going to like every other house but ours.
They saw the Attack on Titan flag outside and they're like, nah. Pass. Probably has spinal fluid in the candies.
We, I'll obviously peek behind the curtain, but also I've announced it on this show before. We had a big mishap at our house right around this time, like a month or two before. So we were dealing with a lot and just like, we were like gonna hand out candy, but like decorations didn't do that. So kids are walking by like, this house is like dead. There's nothing here.
Yeah.
I'm changing that this year. This year I'm making a Halloween Town cutout. I was going to make a whole big ass jack-o'-lantern to sit in my yard, but that would have been too expensive. And where am I going to store that? So I'm just making a flat.
Just do a me and just buy like the $20 pre-done up kit at Target with complete with styrofoam gravestones. I want to play music. Like, I looked up
Men in Black.
I looked up a Halloween playlist, and there's some good songs on there, like, that I was like, I would listen to these on my own. Like, This Is Halloween. The Oogie Boogie song was stuck in my head for like 2-3 days straight. But also like Shake Sonora. What's that song called? The one in Beetlejuice. I was like, these are all great songs. Banana Boat. Yeah, I want to do that too, but anyways, yeah, they get to the big house holding the Eyes Wide Shut party. Isn't that what they're doing?
Yeah, perhaps.
They're the rich family, she's handling candy duty, and they're all Eyes Wide Shut.
I'm on candy duty, they're all fucking in the back.
So it's either that, or this is another peek behind the curtain. This is actually the party that Bruce Wayne goes to in The Dark Knight Rises.
They're going to say in Batman.
Yeah, no, The Dark Knight Rises. When like, there's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne.
Yeah.
He's in there. And the storm coming is the Sanderson sisters.
Why do I always say Batman, like, when I mean the 1989 Batman? Instead of saying Batman 89, I say Batman.
I mean, it is Batman.
But I say Batman. Was like Jack Nicholson, I guess, how he would pronounce it.
I don't know. ask him yourself. Yeah, they're doing that, and you do get that moment of some flirtations between Max and Allison, his sister being not, I wouldn't say a great wing woman, but she kind of is. What'd she say? She's like, my brother likes her yabos, which is basically saying he likes her boobs, which is like, okay. How much has he been saying? Because all she heard him say was, oh, Allison. And she got, Max likes your yabos out of that. Which I've never heard that phrase used once in my life.
That's not true. You've watched this movie a million times.
Yeah, I have heard it, only in this movie. But yeah, you get that moment, and you get the Sanderson sisters brought up again. And from that, we get the setup into them going to the old Salem witch house, so to speak, going to the Sanderson sisters' home, which is now like a tourist attraction. And that's what kind of leads it off, because they, when the Sanderson sisters die, they came up with that plan that if a virgin on a full moon's night on All Hallows Eve lights the black flame candle, then they will come back for one night. Old Max says it's just a bunch of hocus pocus, and he lights the candle. And that's a great moment when he lights the candle and it flips to black. And throughout that movie, there's some run-on gags throughout that play just on that, like just the virgin part. Like when they're talking to the cop, and he's like, he lit the black flame candle. And he's like, you lit the black flame candle? And then the sister's like, and he's a virgin. And the guy's like, are you a virgin? I'll get it tattooed on my forehead.
He didn't stick around that Eyes Wide Shut party long enough.
Yeah, but
the whole movie could have ended right there.
But that's kind of the setup into the hijinks with the witches coming back. Because right there you see, that's a whole nother thing. Is like the witches are now fishes out of water. And that they're just out of time. And it's interesting to see that type of dynamic. Is like, what if you did take people, because we've had time travel movies and what have, but what if you did take like witches from Salem, you know, 1700s, 1800s era Salem, and you bring them back to you know, the 90s. Like, it's funny, like there's clever things like them not knowing about, you know, sprinkler systems, or them not understanding what pavement is. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, hard road. They're like, it's a black river.
Yeah. There are moments, like, I'll skip ahead a little bit, but there is moments, like, toward the end where I was like, wait a minute, how'd they know that? Like, she's chasing them, they're, like, driving away, and Winifred catches up to him, she's like, pull over, I'm gonna need to see your license and registration. I'm like, you don't know about that.
They hung out in Satan's house for a while and watched too much TV.
They pulled a Bumblebee from Transformers and just listened to the radio.
Yeah, that's all.
But, yeah, I mean, it is an interesting concept. Like, even the fact, like, when it comes time, they don't know, like, all the... They're looking for the children. Mary's upset because she can't smell the children, but they're all disguised as, you know, monsters. Yeah,
she smells children, but she can't see children.
Yeah.
That was it.
And it's just, there's a lot of interesting concepts like that of, like, what happens if you take these, like, dangerous witches but throw them into a simple situation of just being out of time, but also, like, how would that fuck with them kind of deal? It's a cool idea.
Yeah, and it also provides, I don't know what the term in writing is, but or what it's called, but, like for example... Like in a horror movie or something, like, why don't they just call for help on their cell phone? So somewhere in the movie, their cell phone gets broken, right?
Yeah.
The reason that they can't do the thing. So they return, the Sanderson sisters, all they have to do is consume the soul of one child. But they don't throughout the whole movie. Why? Because they can't see them. They smell them, but they can't see them because they're all in masks, and that confuses them because they're out of this time.
That and they can't make their formula because they don't have their book.
Oh yeah, that's obviously that too. But But why not just, like, snag any old kid and then get their book back?
Even when it comes time when they do have enough potion to do that, they're like, no, we want that kid.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many great moments, and I don't want to, like, obviously go through the whole movie because I don't, you know, we talk about it in time, but some of my favorite moments...
We used to do that.
Yeah.
Now, we're in our fifth season, damn it.
Yeah. Some of my favorite parts of this movie are the parts like the bus driver scene when, bubble, I'm in trouble. That's a great line. Yeah, that's great. Honestly, one of my favorite parts of the whole movie is when the devil man comes out. He's like, ah, it's my three favorite witches, the Sanderson sisters. And he brings them inside. What's he say to his wife? He's like, honey bunch. He brings them into his home. How weird is that scene when you really do think about it? Because he brings them into his house like he's having a party, but he's not. He just brings these three strangers into his house.
Yeah,
he's like, I'll take you into this.
My wife was going to bed.
Yeah, I'll take you into the non-smoking section. I'm like, I've seen episodes of like Law and Order that started this way. Like,
yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, that's a big highlight too when it comes to my mind. That whole scene, that part where Mary's watching TV, flipping through, and there's the commercial, the baby on the thing.
Yeah.
And I don't remember, I don't know why, but when I was a kid, I remember like pissing my pants laughing at that. I don't know why.
It's not that funny.
I know.
She like screams when the baby's crawling.
Yeah, that's the part.
Yeah.
Like, piss my pants. That's good stuff. What else?
Oh, they go into the kitchen like a torture chamber.
The classic scene of this movie, the scene of this movie that people think of, the iconic scene, is the song,
yeah.
I Put a Spell on You scene. Like Bette Midler is known for being a singer and an actress, but it just made sense for there to be a music number in this, and man, it's so fun to watch. It's so catchy. And like I said, it's become a classic to the point where and this is a spoiler for those who haven't seen Hocus Pocus 2. I knew they were going to do something like that in the sequel, but to be honest, I was worried. Like I was like, it's going to come off cheesy and or cringy or something. It's just going to feel like they're just copying themselves.
My nervousness was that it was going to be a newer song.
Oh, like a modern song.
Yeah, like a
sure.
rap song
yeah.
or something like that. I'm just gonna be like, this doesn't yeah. fit.
But no, they did. Who sings that song?
I don't know. Angelica.
One way.
Angelica Pickles.
Angelica Pickles, that's right.
She sings it in Rugrats the Movie. I've seen it.
I'm gonna get you
one way or another. Blondie.
Yeah, I said blonde. Blondie. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but that's what I'm getting at. It didn't come off cringy or cheesy. It came off great, and is the best part of Hocus Pocus too, if you ask me. And it's catchy, and it's a fucking bop. That's for sure. But yes, the I Put a Spell on You scene is what I look forward to the most when watching.
And it does similar to what you said about like with cell phones and modern horror movies and stuff like that. It explains away like why aren't the parents helping them? It's like they get kind of a spell cast on them to dance. Dance, dance, dance until you die. And
I would have died pretty quick.
Yeah. Been like I can't dance. So I'd just been like shaken.
No, my dad always dances like that.
Yeah, I want to watch Jimmy Neutron now, just from that one line. I sent you that meme right the other day. It was the guys like cheering in the bar, like freaking out. It was a scene when the rockets are going into space and then they blast off. It was fantastic. But anyways, yeah, that part of the movie's great. You see, you know, you get some modern gags, but also, yeah, it explains away, like, why aren't the parents helping? Even, like, them being able to, you see the heroes find ways to defeat the villains without truly defeating them, but in smart ways, like coming up with smart plans to defeat them, like putting them in the, is it a kiln or a big oven, like a art oven kiln, for, yeah, and burning them and stuff like that. And like, there's smart ideas throughout. Yeah, there's a lot of heartwarming moments throughout too, like the stuff with Thackeray, being a cat, being turned into a cat and kind of watching over the book for however many hundreds of years. And then, you know, finding his place, his new home with the Denisons, is just good and heartwarming. And seeing him like kind of like he lost his sister, but now he has Danny to look after, is interesting. Kind of, you know, take and everything like that.
How distraught was I when I found out? And this, me finding this fact out, and I'll say what it is in a moment, was recent. Like, I don't want to put a year on it, but it was probably within the last 10 years. That I found out that it's Thackeray Banks, T.H. Thackeray, yeah. Not Zachary. I was distraught.
I thought you were going to tell me, like, someone died.
No. I was like, my life's a lie.
Thackeray. I kind of like the name Thackeray, though.
Yeah, Thackeray Banks.
That's Jar Jar Binks's cousin, who is more clumsy. Yeah, so he's not around anymore. Yeah. he's passed on. Boss Nass was not as nice to him. The stuff with Thackeray is great throughout. And the finale's a lot of fun. I mean, them successfully getting the book back, taking Danny.
How good is that part too? Like, they get back to the house. Cozy house, by the by.
Yeah.
And yeah, the witches come in. That's a creepy spot, too.
Yeah, that's very a la Labyrinth. Beginning of Labyrinth.
Yeah. But the fingernail cutting through the screen. Yuck.
Or the door opening. Walk past the parents' room, and then the door opens back up.
Spooky. That's the bitters right there. But when they get the book, and they fly out the window, and the whole top explodes. I'm like, holy shit, for the time.
They took it to the next level.
That's some good effects.
Oh, the movie has awesome effects. I mean, everything with Thackeray is pretty good. The cat.
Yeah, they did a CGI cat head on a real cat body. And I mean, it's noticeable here and there, but like not offensively.
No.
Like,
for nowadays, the budget of this movie and everything, it's really not bad.
Yeah, nowadays it would be a full CGI cat, and it would just be like very, very obvious that that's a fake cat. Yeah. Back, like in this movie, it's noticeable, but it doesn't like take me out of it really. I don't know. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. But in general, I leading up to the ending, yeah, with that explosion, and then, you know, them coming up with their plot to, you know, how are they going to trick the witches, daylight savings time and all that, right up until the final battle. I mean, the final battle, nothing really, like, too crazy happens, but it is pretty intense. And the ending, like, is, you know, they just, it's like, it's literally Jaws, right? They just blow up.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, but, it's a rewarding ending. You do care for these characters, and so it's interesting because you care for both sides. You want to see the good guys succeed, but you also want to see kind of like the bad guys, how are they going to get their comeuppance in a satisfying way? That's not like, you don't want them to like, I don't even know, you don't want them to die necessarily. You want to see them kind of be shown off, you know, in an explosive manner, and that you get that.
They are so enjoyable to watch, and they have... They've made you laugh this whole movie, you know, on top of being intimidating with these Sanderson sisters. So, see them go. And, obviously we can't talk about everything about this movie, everything we liked on top of that. But while this finale is going on, earlier in the movie, they needed brooms to fly on, but only Winifred grabbed a real broom. And, what's her name? Sarah got a mop, and then Mary got a vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
So funny. So this finale's taking place, and they're riding, like, on appliances.
Yeah. Did you notice that in that finale, though, you don't see Mary fighting them. They show Sarah Jessica Parker attack Danny, and then they show Sarah Jessica Parker attack Allison. But they never show Mary attack anyone. I noticed that this time.
I wonder why. I do know that there were a lot of deleted scenes. A lot. And during like some kind of special screening in like 2018, they unearthed a lot of these deleted scenes and showed it at like some special screening. But maybe it was just on the cutting room floor, you know, for pacing reasons, who knows. But I do know a couple little factoids. A cool one was that Sarah Jessica Parker found out that her 10th grandmother was actually arrested during the Salem witch trials.
Oh, really?
Her name was Esther Elwell. this is what she was arrested for. Sundry acts of witchcraft and choking her neighbor to death. But it never went to court, so she was never found guilty.
Okay, so I have questions. Well, did she choke them using witchcraft, or just murder them?
I think it was like two separate things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, well, it's not witchcraft, so it's fine.
That's interesting.
I just watched an interview recently where Sarah Jessica Parker said basically she remembers nothing of this first movie, like filming it, doesn't remember like anything about it. She just kind of agreed with what they were doing and just kind of like was like, yep, I'll do it. All right, cut. All right, next scene. Like she just went through the movie, went through the pace, the steps.
It doesn't show because she gives it all in that movie. For sure.
It's my favorite Sarah Jessica Parker movie.
Yeah. And boy howdy.
Yeah.
Leonardo DiCaprio was the original choice for Max, but he passed on it so he could go and be in the movie What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Interesting.
Hey, that movie, he was nominated for that movie, right?
Yeah, he was nominated for an Oscar.
He probably wouldn't have been nominated to play Max Dennison.
Nah, probably not.
Ryan Gosling? He was a Disney kid.
Yeah, he was coming up in like a few more years. He needed like 5 more years to be the age that Max is now. Gotcha. Or in that movie.
He could have been cool enough. He would have still got Allison. 5 years younger.
Ryan Gosling, you can see him in like episode of
Mickey Mouse Playhouse. Oh.
No, Heart of the Dark in like 97 or 98. If you look at the beginning of the movie, Max is wearing a tie dye shirt. What's interesting is the colors in his tie dye shirt are the colors of the witches, like green, purple, red. So I found that to be kind of cool.
That rocks hard, man.
This one surprised me. So this movie, I would have thought this was designed as like a vehicle for Bette Midler, right? Similarly to like how Labyrinth originally was a vehicle for Michael Jackson. Like we want to make a movie with a singer, but Michael Jackson ended up backing out, so they made it with David Bowie. So this Labyrinth was designed around David Bowie. I thought that would be the case here, but it was not. The original choice for Winifred Sanderson was Cloris Leachman, which she's not a singer that I'm aware of.
Cloris Leachman was from...
Oh, she's in so many things. Right?
She was in, Happy Days?
I don't think so.
All I know is from an episode of Family Guy where he gets Cloris Leachman. He says, "Now juggle these bean bags," and she's like, "But I don't know how to." And he's like, "God help you, what's her name?
Cloris.
Cloris." He's like, "God help you, Cloris. Juggle the bean bags." That's all I know
about her. I'm trying to think of what you would know her. Oh, you know her from Young Frankenstein. She plays Frau Blücher.
Yeah, I do. I just looked her up.
She's in High Anxiety. She's in a voice. She's Dola from Castle in the Sky, voice actress, Dola Gang. You know her from quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I found that to be interesting also. And my last little factoid, not a crazy one, but when Hocus Pocus came out, Bette Midler was 48 years old. And here she is reprising her role, and she's 76. She was 76 in Hocus Pocus 2.
Yeah,
could not have told me that at all.
Like, what I was telling the wife about is I found just fun about the sequel. I was kind of wondering, because she was like, are they going to make them look young? Like, are they going to use CGI? I was like, I don't think so. I think they'll keep them the same age, because I was like, honestly, you watch the first scene of Hocus Pocus, and you look at them in this, and they look the same age, because in the first scene, they aged them up with makeup and stuff, because that was, like, the point, is they were getting old, and they needed to eat this child in order to, like, devour the soul of the child in order to get young again, and so they actually looked basically their age, which was cool to see. Like, it's very much a Star Wars-esque in that, like, you know, I wasn't... Mark Hamill said that, you know, we'll come back in however many years, and when we do, that'll be the story, is how old they are and, like, the time that's passed. And that's what happened was, it was like all the characters in Star Wars were now old, and they were played by their original people, and vice versa.
There's always a way to bring it back to Star Wars.
No one's ever really gone. What if we had an Avengers-esque portal sequence, and you had the Sanderson sisters come through a portal, and then you had...
I'm sure that's in one of those, like, made-up compilations.
Probably, and then you had the Sanderson sisters come through, and then you had, like, who else? You had Luke Skywalker come through for some reason, and then we'll throw, like, I don't know. Michael Myers coming through, and then it pans over to, like, where Thanos would be, but it's just Jareth and his bulge. He's just wearing the Infinity Gauntlet on his bulge.
I was going to say a character, but he is from this movie. A character we didn't really mention much, and that's Billy, the zombie.
Billy Butcherson, yeah. He's a lot more in the sequel, which is fun.
Yeah, played by Doug Jones. This is one of his earlier films he had done, but he's gone on and done many, many things. Probably his most... I don't know what his most praised would be. This is maybe his most beloved, but he's the Pale Man in Pan's Labyrinth. The thing with the hands with the eyeballs in it. He is in Hellboy. He's actually very good in Hellboy.
He's a Silver Surfer, damn it.
He's Silver Surfer, that's right. And he's the creature from The Shape of Water. He's always had these, like, more physical performance kind of roles.
He's in Batman Returns, too, mind you.
Is he? Oh, yeah.
He's the Tell thin, him I said. He's the thin Thanks. Clown.
Yeah. He steals the baby, I think.
Forget about the baby. We talked about this.
Great makeup is what I wanted to get at. Impressive makeup.
Yeah, and a lot of good, not deadpan jokes. A lot of good, like, physical humor with him. Losing his head, losing his fingers, you know, stuff like that. Even when they, like, finally unseals his mouth and spits out, like, moths and dirt.
I found out those are real moths.
How did they get those? Because you, like, dap a bit of water on a moth and it's done.
Yeah, exactly. So what the makeup artist did is he built, like, this, like, basically like a latex pocket. So it was just like
latex rubber.
It was just like a big mask, and even inside of his mouth, it was this, like, yeah, like a latex ceiling. So you just put the moths in there, close the mouth, and they're fine. Because it was dry.
Oh, well, there you go. Real moths inside Billy Butcherson's mouth. Yeah, but all in all, this movie make you feel real cozy. Good kickoff to Halloween month. Spooky season and all that. And I do, if you have never watched Hocus Pocus, I definitely do recommend it. To the point where, like, I think Hocus Pocus 2, while it doesn't necessarily capture the magic of the original, it's still a good watch if you like the original. And
you know what the sequel was missing, just off of what you just said? It was missing that cozy factor.
Yeah.
It was a little too sterile.
Don't touch me, I'm sterile. But yeah, no, for sure. And well, with that being said, are you ready to take this film, this cozy film that we talked about here tonight, Hocus Pocus, and have a little fun with it in the factory?
Let's do it.
So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we imagine some fun little games with it. So maybe we usually will do, you know, imagine what the movie would look like if it came from, we took it from the past and moved it to the future and imagine what the actors would look like and the actors and actresses playing the roles, modern booking, everything like that. But today we're going to do something a little different. We just got Hocus Pocus 2. So we wanted to build up to Hocus Pocus 3. And I'll say this much, at this portion of the show, we are going to get into a little bit of spoiler territory in terms of the ending of Hocus Pocus 2. And because we're going to be discussing what we would like to see from a Hocus Pocus 3, if they make one. So, with that being said, if you don't want to hear the spoilers, skip ahead to the end of the episode, maybe 5 or so minutes ahead. But with that being said, you've been warned. So at the end of Hocus Pocus 2, right, we see the Sanderson sisters ultimately all disappear, right? They disappear, and they kind of have a turn to the good side, right? The light side at the end. They realize that they just need each other, and they don't want to be all powerful. They just need, they're nothing without each other, right? And meanwhile, the other three main characters gain magic abilities, and they become kind of their own coven of witches. And so it's kind of thought that maybe in the next movie, which is set up by them revealing that there is a second black flame candle at the end, that possibly the Sanderson sisters will come back. Now, with that being said, what would the sequel movie be, the third movie in the series, if they made one? What do you think? What would be your pitch? What would be your elevator pitch?
Well, because yours, you've kind of dabbled your thoughts into my brain, because yours is actually more likely to happen. Why don't you go ahead and say yours first? Because mine's going to be more for comedic purposes.
Yeah, so at the beginning of Hocus Pocus 2, we're introduced to the younger Sanderson sisters, and it shows how they become witches, how they get their powers and everything like that. And they are introduced to their powers by this very powerful witch, who basically says that her coven has disappeared, and she gives them the book and everything like that. But nothing's resolved with her. They never explain, you know, where she went, what she did. She seemed like a pretty important character that I thought they were going to flesh out several times, but they really never did. She did turn into a bird. And we see that bird throughout the movie in Hocus Pocus 2 at the beginning and the very end. And so, I believe that in the sequel, or the third movie, what we'll see is we'll see her come about. And whether she's trying to, you know, ruin Salem or hurt the new coven of sisters or whatever it may be, I feel like she's going to come up with some kind of plan, plot, to destroy Salem, kill the children, whatever it may be. And ultimately, well, the new coven of girls will have to call upon the Sanderson sisters to come help them. And so the Sanderson sisters will actually be the good guys in the final movie, which I thought would be a lot of fun, being able to see them in maybe a much different light, even set up new comedy in that regards of, like, you know, what would it be like to have them? Similar to how it was fun in, like, Spider-Man Homecoming, seeing, like, Green Goblin, like, Willem Dafoe, and Doc Ock being, like, friendly and seeing a different side to them as their villainous counterparts. Similar to that, where it can set up some fun, you know, back and forth and everything like that. So I'd be curious to see. I think that's ultimately what it would be. I do think there's a world where maybe it's more we get a final, like, a legit witch battle between instead, and it's the Sandersons come back, and it's the new coven versus the Sanderson sisters with, like, magic. But I think more or less, I think that's kind of what will happen. It'll be some kind of, like, there's a reason why that witch isn't as well known, and maybe she does, like, mass scale things where she, you know, takes the lives of multiple children all at once and then disappears and then does it again, and it's like calamity events or something that she takes advantage of. And so ultimately, I don't know, I'm getting down a rabbit hole, but I think that is ultimately what's going to go, is that mm-hmm. witch is going to show up, and they're going to have to bring back the Sandersons to help them.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what will happen if if they do make a third one, and I do feel like when they make a third one, now that the sequel is as vastly popular as it was, I really do think it will happen. And I think it will happen the way you said. But mine's more like a what if scenario. So end of Hocus Pocus 2, they all kind of, in a sense, get wished away. Where do they go? Do they die? In mine, they actually get sent to the past. It's almost like they get sent back where they came. Tail end of Salem Witch Trials. But in my goofy retelling, what if this movie was a retelling of The Crucible, but you put the Sanderson sisters in there?
Okay.
And you get them fussing with John Proctor instead of
Winnie's teeth hanging out, staring at him very seductively.
Yeah, and instead of Abigail Williams, it's Sarah Sanderson.
It might be a little heavy topic. People just dying.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Hocus Pocus opened with them murdering a child.
Yeah, never looked back either. Yeah. Will they have candy apples though?
You know, one last little factoid. I found this out today that the Sanderson sisters from Hocus Pocus are fictional, but were based on three real sisters that were accused of witchcraft. Sisters Sarah Cloyce, Rebecca Nurse, and Mary Eastie.
Yeah.
And Rebecca Nurse and Mary Eastie are featured heavily throughout The Crucible play, and a buddy of mine's actually related.
Did they decide that Rebecca was not a good enough name? They need Winifred instead.
I guess.
Like Mary's good, Sarah's fine. Rebecca, nah.
Yeah.
Winifred, please.
Winifred. Yeah, I guess they found it more intimidating.
It is. I mean, she's an imposing figure.
She is very teeth. Much so. How that made like me the laugh overbite. So hard. That made me laugh so hard in the sequel when Winnie is trying to open the book with her teeth, and Mary's like, "It's like not your teeth, they're your calling card."
Yeah, it's good stuff. But with that being said, are you ready to close her at?
Let's do it. Let's fly.
Yeah. So that is it for the show. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That is our primary site. That's where we post our show to first, and then subsequently it gets posted out everywhere else. So Spotify, Apple Music, Google, wherever you get your music or your podcast from. Hey, we're there. You can also find us over at Twitter. We are at The Bros Movie Pod. This will be posting links to the show, clips of the show, and memes Gus mentions or makes. You can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, go to Facebook, light the black flame candle. The Brothers Movie Factory will appear. It doesn't matter if you're virgin or not. We'll have you. And I like to post memes of what we're watching each and every week, as well as links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and that.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers. Da 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 da